Hello, my name is Tucker Johnson, and I am your host today as we experience NIMC Live, where we talk about the latest and greatest in translation, localization, internationalization, culturalization, and all that fun stuff global companies need to delight their international customers. On this program, we invite guests who like to have fun and have some value to add for our audience of globalization professionals. I'm always eager to provide a platform to those with a good story or a good data set, so let us know if there are any topics you'd like covered or guests we should reach out to for future episodes. If you're not already, make sure that you are subscribed to NIMC Insights. We are coming to you live today on LinkedIn, Facebook, X, probably a few other places, YouTube. All of our old episodes are archived over on our YouTube channel, so lots of good resources over there, as well as workshops, e-learnings. If you want to learn about the language services industry, go check out NIMC Live and other NIMC resources over on the NIMC YouTube channel. So without further ado, I don't have a whole bunch of stuff I'm going to be plugging today. I want to get right into it today because we have round two. We have a treat today. Because we have two language and interpreting industry experts joining us for an Ask Me Anything. So Ask Me Anything, what that means is if you are joining us live today, then please join us in the comments. Add your questions, add your comments, add your expertise in the comments, and we'll bring those up on screen and we will address them live as we go through this today. Also, if there are any challenges or problems that happen with the live stream, then know that we are recording this session. Last time we had a few hiccups. So we will be recording a session and posting the full session on the NIMC LinkedIn and the NIMC YouTube channel. So let's meet our guest today. First, we have Deepak, who is the CEO of Global Language Solutions, providing translation, interpretation, and technology services. He drives industry advances, aiding communication with limited English proficiency and deaf and hard of hearing individuals through a SaaS platform. Globo supports healthcare organizations, ensuring language access compliance and improving provider-patient communication and outcomes. We also have Evandro, my colleague Evandro, who is a language services executive with 30 plus years of experience. He is a former chief interpreter at the United Nations and co-founder of Kudo. Evandro is a charismatic communicator who has interpreted for world leaders and drives innovation in live interpretation for online and hybrid meetings. Gentlemen, welcome back to the show. How are you doing today?
Very well. Happy to be here again.
Good. And well, I'm glad we got an opportunity for round two, because we had a lot of questions last time that we didn't get through all of them. And also we have some more questions.
Yeah, last time it was a short program, I guess 30 minutes or so. So Today we have more time.
Yeah. We've got more time. Yeah, I think Deepak had to go catch a plane last time.
Let's get home.
So you're home with the kids. Hallelujah. Well, welcome. So we can really take our time today. I don't feel like I need to rush through this, but I feel introductions are done. I kind of want to get right into the questions here. We're focusing largely on the interpreting space and with the specific subcategory of how AI is changing that space, right? So last time we talked about things such as how is AI comparing to in-person interpreters as far as accuracy. We talked about some of the ethical ramifications of it. We talked about kind of the overall impact on society. And we gathered some questions today that really kind of build upon the conversation that we had last time. But I also wanted to get more specific into, like, what are some of the specific use cases and how can people use this looking at different areas. And the first one, because I had this come up a number of times, is the role of interpreting, specifically AI interpreting, in education. I kind of wanted to start our conversation with that today. It's back to school season. Deepak, you're at home with your kids as well. Yeah, and I see that you guys are frozen. So let me see if I can fix that. Off to a good start. 1 second, ladies and gentlemen, technical difficulties.
Yeah, I can see and hear you.
Oh, you can see and hear me? Yeah, but we can see and hear you, but you're back now.
Okay.
All's well. Yeah. So if you could see and hear me, we're talking about education, and maybe I'll turn this over to Deepak. How, because schools, and we're going to talk about other government agencies too in this conversation, schools are required to provide language access to individuals, to students, and to parents as well. What role is AI playing today? Are there already existing use cases for this? And what role does AI potentially have to really level up what the education system here in America and abroad can do for providing interpreting services?
Yeah. So, I mean, schools are already providing, you know, interpretation via AI, whether they're using, you know, Google Translate or some other type of software program to not just help the students understand what the teacher is saying if the student happens to understand a different language, but also to translate, you know, the text into different languages. So that's already happening. I think the other interesting use case for AI is how is it going to be used in education? Not so much from interpretation standpoint, quite honestly, it's more of how can use AI to help students better understand things. So I'm not sure if you followed this whole organization called Khan Academy, but my kids actually, you know, use one of their apps where they have these tailored types of programs for kids, and they teach them about various things, whether it's math or reading, mm-hmm. or what have you. And they've been piloting with an AI assistant. So as my son is trying to learn something, he's actually able to interact with the AI assistant. The AI assistant is actually providing real-time feedback to him, real-time coaching. And so as you think about the role of AI in education, I think what it's going to enable teachers and schools to do is provide unique education, unique teaching in real time for students. But the whole interpretation, translation of materials and languages, that's already been happening. That's going to continue to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially for situations from an interpreting point of view, like, because we do, and I just had a discussion live a couple weeks ago about this, about language access plans and language access policies at the state level, county level, federal level, even. And schools are required, anybody receiving funds from the federal government is required to provide language access, right? Now, the caveat is there's not a lot of great regulations around that, and a lot of agencies, government agencies, aren't currently doing that. And one thing that we come up over and over again when we're talking to different governments is that they're just machine translating their website, and that they're calling it a day with that. And I think that can be machine, I don't want to villainize machine translation, right? But I think there's a lack of knowledge, education, awareness around what machine translation is and what it isn't, what it works for and what it isn't. And with the interpreting space, I think the interpreting space from a technology perspective has kind of just always been following behind the translation space by 5 or 10 years. Right. So maybe, Evandro, you can talk a little bit about what is that gap between what we're seeing with translation versus today, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, versus what we're seeing with interpretation now and into the future. And specifically, what lessons can we learn? What lesson about interpreting? What lessons can we learn from the translation space?
Interesting. Well, before I go there, let me say that the impact of AI in education. If there's one thing AI is doing for education, it's making it a lot easier to cheat, right? for the students, for anybody. So when I look at it, when I think about it, one interesting thing is information is no object anymore, right? So when you have ChatGPT answering any questions and getting, you know, at your fingertips anything you need in terms of information, what that tells us is that the educational system has to take a very deep and long look at itself and change the way we do business. You can't just build a curriculum based on information. This is available to anybody 24/7. So the new curricula have to be experiential, they have to be something based on how do I transfer authority, how do I mentor people with the information. So in that, when I look at my son, for example, Daniel, who dropped out of school because he just couldn't handle it anymore. He said, listen, everything I see there, I know that and more because I'm exposed to this every day. Right. So, and the way they teach it is too slow for me, too old fashioned for me and so on. And that's becoming a trend to such an extent that the companies don't even look at your you know, formal education anymore, then fine. They want to make sure that you went to school, that you had the discipline of going there every day for 4 years and committed to taking a few tests and so on. But they don't really mind whether you went here or there, right? It's just, it's more an indirect measure of your commitment, if anything. Now, back to your question regarding, you know, this comparison between translation and interpretation. I think we're not talking apples and apples here.
Okay.
Translation, the CAT tools, it all started and still is an effort to help translators do better, right? Mm. In the beginning, the CAT tools and how it started. So the wave was different from what it is in interpretation. And the mistake I see us making in interpretation is exactly not having that curve. I've been talking over and over about this. I'm starting to sound like a broken record, where I say, listen, you can go from A to Z, but you have to go A, you know, B, C, D, E, F, G. If you want to build something that in the end is going to, you know, help everybody, help us all transition and so on. Translation had that. It was the CAT tools. Okay, well, I can make you faster. I can make you less repetitive. I can alleviate some of your burden. But in the interpreting, what we did was, oh, we can do this. Forget the interpreters. Forget the in-person. Let's go here. Jump, you know, trying to straddle the, you know, years and in, you know, decades of experience in a beat, right? And that doesn't work because it creates a bad rap for the AI systems. Oh, you see, this is ridiculous. The accuracy is not there. So we're too quick to judge a quality that we think is not good enough, not high enough. But it also alienates everybody else along the process that could and should, you know, play a part in it. We need the interpreters to follow this along. We need the interpreters to tell us how this can be made better and how we can be applied to the things that interpreters don't even want to do, right? I don't want to be sitting, and I talked about that last time, I don't want to be sitting at a UN meeting repeating, Colombia has the floor. How does Colombia vote? Colombia votes yes. Yeah, I could be out, you know having a snack or something, and I come back when AI is done with that. So what I think is, again, I insist on that, what I think is a new perspective. The machines are going to do a lot more than they do today, and they're going to get better and better. Will they replace us? Yes, if we don't slow it down to the extent needed for us to jump in and say, okay, let's hold your hand and see how it goes.
Yes.
Right? If we wait for too long, then it's too late.
And part of, I mean, Tucker, to your point, there's more translation happening in education than in interpretation. And part of that reason is a cost factor, right? I mean, schools only have so much budget. So to be able to provide interpreters for multiple different languages in real time, there's a cost element to this. And that's
right.
Honestly what's driving a lot of this excitement about AI, this whole belief that we can use technology to provide interpretation in situations where it was too expensive to provide it historically. Now there's a big discussion, and Evandro and I talk about this all the time, around accuracy. How good is enough when you think about accuracy? Because right now you have a world where you have students that might speak a language, and they might get the materials translated in their language, but when the professor is talking to them about that topic, they don't understand what they're saying because there's no interpretation being provided. They're not able to have a discussion with the professor because there's no interpretation being provided. So there's nothing happening.
Right.
The question is that better than using AI for interpretation where the accuracy might not be 100% perfect, right? That's sort of the discussion we need to have in some of these use cases.
And it's kind of a judgment call, right? It's something that's really hard to codify. But when we're talking about things like the education system or government agencies, then, you know, judgment... I don't like to leave judgment calls up to politicians. Usually you want some regulations and some guidelines, some guide rails there around that. So I think that what comes down to it, and we were talking a lot about regulatory stuff, like before we came on live, I was eavesdropping to you guys chit-chatting about the different regulations that are coming out about AI. But, and I want to talk about that. But before we get into it, we have a question I wanted to bring up here.
Tucker, before you go, just a provocative comment here. Uh-oh. Who do you leave quality assessments to? That's another question, because if you leave it up to the linguists, then it opens up another can of worms, because again, linguists, and I'm one of them, you want it perfect. We want it to, you know, stellar. Everything is shiny and everything is good. Do clients want that? Do clients need that? What is good enough, right?
Well, so yeah, perfect is the enemy of good enough is one of the mantras I live by, right? If everything needs to be perfect, then sometimes that prevents things from getting done, period. And you're absolutely right. Linguists, if I tell someone, please review, let's just talk about translation. Here's a translated document. Please review it and find any mistakes. What they hear is, I need to find mistakes. They will find mistakes.
You know, yesterday I published a text here about, you know, saying, it's my column in Multilingual, by the way. First sentence says, AI gets a bad rap. And I spelled rap, R-A-P. A colleague, a linguist, came back and said, by the way, there's a typo in your text. It's not R-A-P, it's R-E-P. I said, well, it turns out it's not. It's R-A-P. It's counterintuitive. But, you know, out of the whole article, that's what caught their eye, right? And for good reason, and well-meaning, and I had a nice conversation with a colleague and so on, and I thanked her. But, you know, these are the kinds of debates that you get into if you involve the linguist too soon, too much into the details. At the end of the day, this is customer-driven. This is demand-driven. And we got to ask the customer, how good is good enough, right?
Right. And like I said, it's a philosophical question. It's a judgment call on that. Going into the chat, a question that we see here is specifically about school systems, but I think this question could be generalized to anything, is do you get a sense of if school systems understand the privacy implications of using public AI resources for translating and interpreting with information that comes from minors, aka the students? And I think this question, you know, replace school systems and minors with hospital systems and patients. Right? Well, I think hospital systems understand they have lawyers. They've been sued before, but maybe school systems don't. Deepak, maybe you can talk a little bit about this.
I definitely think hospital systems understand the implications of data privacy. I think when you think about it in terms of AI, I think you need to break it up into two buckets. One is what data is being used to train the actual AI tool? Is it data that the hospital is providing when the AI tool is providing the real-time interpretation? Or is it some other data? That's sort of one element. And then the second bucket is when the AI is providing that interpretation and they're listening to what the physician or the patient is saying and they're interpreting it, what happens to that data? Is it being used again to feed the AI and make it smarter? Is it being erased and nothing's happened to it? So I think you have to think about it into two buckets. And that second bucket is kind of interesting because then you have to compare it into today's world, which in today's world, you have a person, a live person that's actually hearing the whole conversation. And in that world, that person could be recording that whole conversation. So it's not like the current world is safe from data privacy issues as well. We have data privacy issues. One would argue that removing the person makes it a little bit more private because it's only a conversation between the two people. But the question comes, what happens to that actual data that is being used to train the interpreter? And then what happens with that data that the interpreter uses when they're actually doing the interpretation? It's a complicated question.
Yeah, it certainly is. Verandero.
I'm concerned here whether I'm going to get a package of anthrax sent to my home address after my last comment. But anyway, yeah. Now, one thing I want to say about interpreters in education is that most interpreters working in education, they are not professional interpreters. They are bilingual staff who are asked to do a task that they are not prepared for, usually. And they grow into it. This is how I became an interpreter. One day somebody called me into a meeting room and I sit there, did this and did that. Me, I've never done that. Well, you'll be fine. That's how some of us started. And then I went after an education and all. So many of them will blossom into full-fledged interpreters and will be excellent and so on. Some will struggle. Mm-hmm. But in the beginning, you have, yes, an issue with confidentiality. Yes, sure. in, you know, both in the AI world and in the normal entrepreneur world, as Deepak well pointed out. But you also have the issue of, what about everything else? What about quality? What about the mother saying one thing and the interpreter not getting it because he or she is not an interpreter? So you have a quality issue, a real quality issue in the early stages of an interpreter trying to play that role. There may be a lot more deleterious than the risk of exposing some sometimes benign content to the possibility of having that leaked. So again, I agree with Deepak that we need to be reasonable here as we look at these things. Not to get, you know, get something that's going to prevent progress from following its course just because, oh, by the way, there's this little thing that we need to look into. It's always been there, and there's a much higher risk of not having enough trained interpreters doing the job for such an important type of encounter. So what AI can do in education more than anything is help train those interpreters. I think AI could be used to come up with, you know, automations, better, you know, practice, deliberate practice sessions and so on, where these interpreters can, in a safe environment, try these things out from redacted past recordings that they can use to get better at what they do, try and anticipate what's coming and so on. That's a much, you know, that's something that another bilingual staff cannot do because he or she is busy doing something else. AI is always available to do that.
Vanjo, and you talked about trade-offs. I've talked to a couple hospital systems that have an interesting perspective on privacy related to using an in-person interpreter versus a telephone or video interpreter. And this is just a handful of hospital systems. But their belief is they would prefer to use an interpreter that is not located in the same region or geography because, right, they are listening on a private conversation. So if that interpreter happens to live four blocks away from that patient or that clinician, they heard that conversation. So their take is, even though we know in-person interpretation is more effective, better than doing interpretation over the phone or video, they're doing the trade-offs, but there's a privacy thing here, Deepak. I'd rather that interpreter be in a different state or a different country so I don't have to risk them running into the patient or the clinician at the grocery store.
Absolutely. Yeah, very, very good point.
Yeah, I think, you know, what I'm hearing from this is the popular blog post topic nowadays is, let's talk about privacy concerns of using AI. Let's talk about quality concerns using AI. But what we need to remember is there are privacy concerns and quality concerns with human interpreters, human translators as well. Like, whoever said, you know, I want to get machine translation to human quality translation has a lot more faith in humanity than I do because I've seen some pretty bad human translations, right? What is human parity? What is human quality, right? And that's kind of the question, like, I think you brought up, Deepak, is like, who's defining the quality?
Yeah, we know there's a range in terms of the quality that a human interpreter could deliver. And the question is, what is acceptable? And we need to all agree on what, or at least the customer needs to have a perspective on what's acceptable. And then the question is, can an AI do it as well or better?
Right.
And do you accept the trade-off? But you're right. We need to have a standard way of looking at what is acceptable quality before we start making comments that, you know, the AI interpreter is not as good as a human.
Right.
You can't make that comment unless we agreed upon what is acceptable for quality.
And that what's acceptable might vary depending upon the context, which kind of brings us to the next question that we have here in chat here. Let me bring this up. Eliana Lobo asks, good enough is so relative. No, good enough menu translations versus good enough medication directions are very different, as what is at risk has very different weight in this comparison. Situations where your freedom or finances are at risk, like court settings, or one's health or life is at stake, hospital settings, means guidance needs to be in place prior to implementation. Lots of spaces where AI will be a boon. I am concerned about the mad rush to implement due to cost savings before thoughtful triaging of the context that still require oversight. This is golden. This is a great comment. Thank you very much, Eliana.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah. And even
in total agreement, Eliana. Sorry, Deepak, if I jumped the gun, maybe I cut you short. But again, my gospel, let's go slow. let's go slow, unless you're an interpreter, which probably means you're going too slow, right? Because you don't want to go, right? So let's go faster if you're an interpreter. But all the rest of us, let's slow down a little bit. Let's see exactly. Let's look into the triage issue. Let's see what works and what doesn't. All it takes is for micrograms to be mistaken for milligrams for you to kill somebody, right? Mm-hmm. Depending on the drug. So yes, you got to be careful. You got to have all the weights and balances, the checks and balances in place and so on. But that, none of that should be an excuse to, oh, because of that, you see, we can't go ahead. No, no. How can we go ahead in light of that, right? So that's my thinking.
I completely agree. I think we need to go slow. We need to not just test it out for the main cases, but also the edge use cases. So the medication example is completely accurate. AI doesn't have common sense. So if you have an interpreter and they thought the physician might have said, 100, where in actuality you would never take a drug 100 times, it's going to be exactly. Hold on, doctor, what did you actually mean? Yeah. AI would just interpret it into 100. They don't have that common sense. Now, can you build protocols into that? Yeah, you can build protocols into that. Yes. But you have to really understand what all those use cases are, what all those edge use cases are, given the fact there's so much at stake when you think about healthcare and legal and education.
Yeah. I was telling Deepak, Tucker, I had an interesting experience yesterday with ChatGPT, where I asked a question and the question came back and it appeared to be wrong. And I said, are you sure this can't be? And ChatGPT apologized. Said, oh, sorry about that. You're right. Yeah, this is not this, it's that. I said, man, this is getting really human now. A good human, by the way, right? able to apologize. So these things are, they surprise you every day.
I posted something on LinkedIn, I think a couple of days ago, where I learned from my tech team that and it was like, AI can't count letters. And if you ask, it's now sort of works. It depends on which LLM you use, but count the number of R's and strawberries. It was getting it incorrect. And what's interesting is this was a topic just a couple months ago, right? Last year, and still we have millions of dollars being put into the value and the things that AI can do. But there's also some basics things that AI can't do, we can solve for. It doesn't mean it can't do it in the future.
If you point it out, then tomorrow it can do, right?
Right, it can do it. But those edge cases are things we need to really figure out, especially, again, when we think about healthcare or legal, right? Because there could be some serious ramifications.
Yeah. Even just talking about healthcare, right? Like, what is healthcare? There's an entire, looking at it from the user's perspective, there's an entire customer journey that they go through in the healthcare system. So if, Deepak, you're working with a healthcare client, as you do, right? And you can't give them one piece of advice. You can't consult them on one specific way to go, because there's a customer journey from marketing to scheduling a visit to the actual visit, which is what we always think about. But then there's discharge instructions, there's follow-ups, there's all of these different things, and the quality, acceptable quality levels, the privacy concerns, all of that, it's going to be different at each stage of that customer journey. So when you're working with a client like that, like a large healthcare hospital system, for example, like, how do you talk to them about that? How do you advise them on new technologies, knowing that even within their own organization, they have different needs?
So in full transparency, this thinking evolves every week. If you ask me a couple months ago in terms of, and there are hospitals interested in using AI for interpretation, my response was, you want to use it for the non-clinical, sort of simple to use administrative tasks, patient calls and needs directions, or needs to let them know that they're running late. That was like, that's where you want to use AI for interpretation. My thinking has evolved in all transparency, because it's not that the interpretation world needs to understand the implications of using AI for interpretation. The interpretation world also needs to understand the ramifications that there are companies out there using AI to create agents where you don't need actual interpretation. So I'll give you an example. One of the use cases I would talk about is, well, let's test out AI for when someone's trying to schedule an appointment, right? It's less clinical, it should be safer, less risky. And so you can think of a world where instead of the patient
having to schedule an appointment, you have a live interpreter, use an AI interpreter. Well, my thinking is now you have companies actually creating agents, AI agents that take that call that speak 15, 20 different languages, right? So if you think about AI, I think we also have to think about not just how is AI going to impact interpretation, right, interpreters, but it's also how is AI going to impact actual jobs where you have traditionally it was a person that spoke one language. Now I have an AI agent that can speak 15, 20 different languages, which then questions, okay, what's the role of the interpreter in that case? So it's evolving, quite honestly, Tucker, on a monthly basis as I sort of hear about these new innovations happening.
Yeah, which is why it's so important to stay on top of it, or at least be partnering with someone that can stay on top for you. Hashtag exactly. follow NIMSY Insights for ongoing updates.
Tucker,
there's my
for point. Example, a different perspective, a different side of it. I'm working with a company that handles exotic languages, our indigenous languages, and the Mayan languages and all. Mm-hmm. And when the subject of AI came about, the response I got was very strict and very, very direct. And I said, no, we don't want to hear about AI. But for a very specific reason, we're talking about communities that have been invisible for too long. Mm-hmm. So it would be unethical of us to try and impose AI to do the job that a few, a handful of individuals today can do, and to serve a community that understands nothing about technology necessarily and so on. So in that domain, AI is going to be not only counterproductive, but it's going to be destructive of everything you're trying to build, all the empowerment that you're trying to create. So again, it's a case-by-case analysis, right, Deepak? So you need to be very mindful of what the whole supply chain around you are and away is, and to what extent you want to or must necessarily keep some of those places intact.
Right? Yeah. Tucker, I think the other thing is this experimentation is not just happening at a system level for hospital systems. It's not like the hospital system says, okay, we're going to pilot this for AI. I'm talking to more and more clinicians that are going rogue, that are using, just like I'm using Google Translate. Now they're using these AI apps. I was just talking to a doctor earlier this week. He's using an AI app to actually do the interpretation. And he's like, it works really well. There's no latency. He thinks it's accurate. It's hard. He doesn't speak 15 languages. That's the big thing, but it seems to actually work. I have another example where Zoom has this feature where if you're on a Zoom call, it will automatically interpret certain types of languages, and a hospital system turned it on by mistake for their clinicians. So the clinicians just started using it. And when they turned it off, there was a little bit of like, what are you doing? This is really easy. I didn't have to wait for an interpreter. I could just get it through Zoom. And so it goes back to this whole trade-off things, especially with healthcare, right? It has to be as easy as possible for the clinician to use. If not, they are going to go a little bit rogue and try and experiment with these different tools.
Right. Exactly. And Yvonne, we're following up on your point, like working with these, because when we think of interpretation, we're thinking, 95% Spanish interpretation, so to speak, right? But like one challenge I know working with different communities is a lot of times you get in these indigenous languages that you were talking about, Evandro, and it's just assumed that they speak Spanish. They walk into a doctor's office, the doctor just looks at them and says, okay, we need a Spanish interpreter. They don't speak Spanish. They speak an indigenous language, right? Yeah. And with these communities particularly, there is a high level of distrust, particularly of institutions, of governments. A lot of these people came from situations where government was not your friend. They didn't want to be filling out forms and getting on government lists and all of those things. And trust becomes so important. And I say that to segue into Deepak. I noticed like you were posting about this recently, the importance of trust when working with these different communities. And there was a, I don't know if people can see this. I'll bring it up on screen here. But there's a recent JAMA Network open survey of almost 500,000 unique participants showing an overall trust decline. You break it down by white Americans, significant decline reaching around 50%. Black Americans experienced one of the most substantial decreases, dropping from 65% to 35% during the pandemic. Hispanic Americans, 68% to 40%. And I just wanted to bring this up to kind of poke you a little bit, Deepak, on what What role does language access play in building trust with these communities? What are the potential gains by providing good language access, and what are the potential risks if you don't get it right?
Yeah, language access is a basic way of communicating, and communication is a foundational element of trust. If you can't communicate with someone, it's hard to really trust them. And I saw it with my own mom, who, when she was going through some of her healthcare issues, and we did not get an interpreter, we would leave that doctor's appointment and she'd be like, I don't understand what they're saying. And then right away she'd go call up, you know, our uncles in India to try and actually get real advice in terms of what to do. And so, there's a lot of issues, as you pointed out, historically with some of these communities and the trust they have within our healthcare system. And one of the first steps we need to do is to ensure that we provide them with language services so we can build that foundation of trust. Now, from an AI standpoint, it hits both ways, because if you think about AI is basically trained on historical data. And I've posted about this as well. Well, if you look at historical data, a lot of historical data is based on only certain populations, certain demographics, certain languages, right? And so when you think about the benefits of AI, yes, we're going to use AI because it's going to be cheaper and we'll be able to provide it during every interaction during the patient journey. Well, that only is going to work for the data we have on certain populations. What about these other, right, languages, these other groups? So I think it goes both ways. I think it could be very beneficial at the same time if we don't approach this carefully and make sure that we're really thinking about all the different groups that could benefit from language services. We could be almost increasing health inequities. So.
And Tucker, when I was living in California as a student, I needed a car. So I went to different dealerships and so on. And every time I said, I'm Brazilian, by the way, when they asked me, where are you from? I said, well, I'm Brazilian. I either got somebody trying to talk to me in Spanish.
Say, buenos dias.
Or something else. But the funniest one was this guy who said, oh, Brazil, I got the thing for you. And then he took me to another guy. You know, they whispered to one another and so on. And the guy probably said, well, this guy's from Brazil. Immediately, the door opens and the guy goes, aloha, right? Aloha, trying to be very open and very inviting into the conversation and so on. Again, I wanted out. I didn't even want to hear the guy's voice. You see, because, and it's the same in healthcare, particularly, right? So when you walk into a doctor's office, you want to be seen. You want to be recognized for who you are. You want to be heard and listened to, right? If the first thing they assume about you is that you speak a different language, or that you have, you know, that you have a habit that you don't have, and so on, that already gets everybody, you know, on the wrong foot. So language is a human right indirectly, right? So it's your affirmation of who you are, and it gives you the ability to express yourself and your feelings and so on. Having that recognized, having that within reach, so that you can really express yourself and not come across as someone who's even unintelligent sometimes, right? Because if you don't understand what the person is trying to say, it's about the person that are totally wrong, often totally wrong. So language is a big part of that. Whether that's going to come through a human interpreter, ideally in a healthcare setting of that nature, or through AI, is immaterial, at least if the system can recognize, listen, let me get you a system that will help us communicate, and that you make the choices that inform the system what language it should be prepared to handle. Then it already shows that, you know, I'm with you. I want to recognize you for who you are. Here's a menu of options that you can choose from that's going to get us all on the right foot starting this conversation, rather than make assumptions and say aloha, right?
So, Vandra, I'll put you on the spot here, because we know that there are times in the patient journey where the patient is not getting an interpreter because there's no on-site interpreters available, or maybe the video interpreter is not available, or right, the person on the phone is not available. And so when we talk about trust, because we all agree that, you know, language services is a foundational element for trust, the question I have is, if in that situation you do use some sort of AI to do interpretation, it might not have the same empathy as a live interpreter. It might not be as accurate as the best interpreter out there. but your scenario is you use an AI interpreter or the clinician just tries to talk to the right patient. What is a better scenario here? Because I do think it's all about trade-offs.
Again, the scenario I am alluding to is I walk into the office, the doctor looks at me, and he can make two things. He can do one of two things. He can make assumptions about who I am and say aloha and be totally off. Or he can say, I don't know. I probably don't speak this guy's language. So, and then try to bring in, will in a system that, that helps us get the conversation started and start by saying, listen, I don't have an interpreter handy. This is a new system that, that we are relying on and so on, because I need to understand who you are. I need to understand your needs, and I need to understand, I see you, I hear you, right? Help me work through this machine so that we can get to a conversation where the first thing you're hearing from me is that I want to help you. I want to get it right. I want to help you get to where you need to go. So that is better than no interpretation. That's better than just assuming that, oh, we can struggle in Spanish or you know, French Creole and so on. It might be a broken system, but it signals that I'm trying to do the right thing at least.
Also,
so moving on, I wanted to get to some other questions, and there's a comment here that I wanted to bring up. But moving on kind of from the patient perspective, we talked about we're not just patient, but user, client, whoever it may be, limited English proficient person. We've talked about that. We've talked about a little bit about from the organizational perspective, the benefits of using AI and providing interpretation period. But let's move on towards the regulatory portion of it. There's not a lot of regulation out there because it's such new technology. And I feel that the technology is evolving so quickly, it's going to be really hard to put guardrails, to put guidelines around, like, how do we actually regulate this? And we had a comment here, I'll bring it up, if I can bring up the chat here, from Eliana again says, I invite you all to participate and give feedback to the Safe AI Task Force. We need voices like yours to help craft common sense guidance for AI implementation in healthcare. And the AI Task Force, if those of you guys haven't heard of it, I'll encourage you to go check it out at safeaitf.org. They're doing a lot of research and work around this area, but there's also other agencies out there working around AI out there. Gentlemen, and I'll turn it over to whoever wants to jump in. What are your experiences working with regulators or following the regulatory environment? What advice would you have to them? I'll just kind of open the floor.
I think, and Tucker, you made this comment, it's moving so quickly. It's hard to sort of, all right, keep up with the regulations. I mean, if you look at the latest 1557, there was some language in there that talks about what can be machine translated versus what couldn't for healthcare. And then what you see now, at least in the US, states are taking it upon themselves to come up with their own state by state regulation, which is going to be really interesting, because if you support a hospital that system that goes across multiple states, it's like which state you adhere to. So I think they're trying to play a little bit of catch up here. I do think that it is incumbent on our industry, the language services industry, to help dictate and have a perspective in terms of what would be the safest use of AI. I don't think the perspective should be no AI, because I think that's sure. That doesn't make sense, right? As we come up with these perspectives, however, I do think, especially in healthcare, you got to think about at least two different, if not three different stakeholders here. Obviously, you have the interpreter and the implications AI is going to have in the world of interpretation. You have the patient and family that at the end of the day, we're trying to figure out how do we build more trust and get them what they need. Then you also have the clinician. And I do think we need to spend more time talking to the actual hospital systems and clinicians to understand what solution, what AI solution, what approach AI would make the most sense from their end. Because they're also facing their own issues and their challenges. They're also faced with their own cost constraints. They're also faced in terms of trying to figure out how do we use AI for other parts of my job. So as we think about our perspective for safe AI and how do we use AI in the world of language services, I do think it needs to come from all of those stakeholders.
Totally agree. And again, what we also need is to develop new I was going to say regulations, but talking more about ISO norms and so on, that understand that this is a new thing. Right? You can't just try to apply whatever went for human interpretation, for example, to AI interpreting. And we saw a lot of that happen back in the days of RSI. The world, came to a halt, and we needed RSI, and there were so many things getting in the way because of regulations that were in place. Oh, you cannot work with an interpreter who was not here, or many, many demands that were imposed on the system that were absolutely things you just couldn't meet, right? And the situation was such that a new system was required. So as soon as these things start to get traction, as AI is doing, is when more and more needs to be done specifically into the realm of AI, looking into, okay, how can we create a new norm that actually grows in time as fast as the very system is growing, so that we're not stuck when we need to use it and having to deal with a lot of paperwork, with a lot of red tape when an urgent response is needed. That was the case with the COVID, and we wasted a lot of time on that.
The other thing, just Tucker, to weigh in here is when you think about regulations, a lot of the government regulations is going to be around safety with AI. And if you think about safety and AI for medical interpretation, I sound like a broken record. It's all about quality, how accurate it is. So one of the things I really think we need to do as an industry is establish quality. So when you think about quality and accuracy as it relates to medical interpretation, what does that mean? What is the methodology? How many times are we going to assess quality? What does good look like versus acceptable, right? I think we need to have a perspective that we need most, if not every, healthcare institution to adopt, so that we're all comparing apples to apples when we're saying, okay, should we use AI? Okay, well, is AI as accurate as it needs to be? That's missing from this industry. We need an acceptable standard of assessing quality and accuracy for medical interpretation that all, if not most, hospital systems adopt.
Deepak, let me challenge you on that. I agree with you that we need quality standards for AI, but do we have the other apple to compare to? Have we done this for human interpreters? Have we set those standards for what quality is for human interpretation? These are also a bit flex, right? We take for granted that, oh, humans by now know what they're doing and so on, and quality is supposed to be good. But at the end of the day, it's different people judging the quality from where they stand with whatever limited resources they have. So perhaps we need to, reassess the whole way in which we go about determining what quality and interpretation is in the first place for humans and machines alike before we can have that conversation, right? Again, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just extending the discussion a little bit just to get us all more, provocative, if you will.
I agree. I guess the world I envision is if a hospital system is trying to make a decision on whether or not I use AI for interpretation, and one of the elements they're looking at is accuracy, there's a clear bar that AI needs to overcome in order to say, yes, it meets my bar for accuracy. And that's what seems to be missing. If you talk to five different hospital systems and say, okay, how do you know if the AI is going to be as accurate as a human interpreter? I think you're getting five different answers, if you even get five different answers. And so I think the role that,
What a good human interpretation is. What good human interpreting is, right? So the benchmarks are all over the place.
Yes. Yeah.
It goes back to like the philosophical question of what is human parity, right? Yeah. What is human quality, right?
Yeah.
So we ended last.
Sorry, one more thing. Almost like analog is self-driving cars.
Okay.
Exactly. Right? I was going to go there. Yeah.
Self-driving cars. Self-driving cars can't drive well. There's no way they can drive well. I'm not going to jump in a car. In fact, the last time we had this this webinar, I was flying from San Francisco. It was the first time I took a Waymo, complete self-driving car, through the streets of San Francisco. It was awesome. I mean, it navigated traffic. I felt completely safe. at the time, I didn't really want to talk to anyone, so I didn't have to talk to a driver. it even knew things like it was dropping me off at a restaurant in an alleyway, and it knew not to go into the alleyway because there was a car that was actually stuck there, right? But you think about sort of how good is good enough for human parity. Well, one could argue, and you see the research studies out there, that self-driving cars are as good, if not better, than human drivers. And if the world only had self-driving cars, there would be a lot less accidents out there, right? So there's a lot of analogs between the world of self-driving cars and transportation that we can learn from. The other point is self-driving cars, we've been on this journey for decade, at least a decade now, right? And it's finally starting to come with medical interpretation. Tucker, you made this point. Things are advancing so quickly. I mean, I talk about Google Translate all the time, but it wasn't until the last 12 months that I'm now starting to actually see people create these apps that clinicians are using. So the pace of change is happening so quickly. I think there's things we can learn from the whole self-driving car, scenario.
Well, definitely less accidents and less road rage, right? Because I'm assuming it didn't yell at anybody, didn't give anybody the finger. So it's a safer ride from that perspective as well. Right?
You have to pay extra for that feature. It's, it's the DLC package. Well, moving from that analogy, I mean, self-driving car, there's a big hardware component. I wanted to talk a little bit because we're talking about AI, we're talking about software a lot, but also, there's a lot of advances happening with hardware and devices. Nowadays, we all have, the entirety of human knowledge in our pocket, in our cell phone. And Evandro, I noticed you just recently published an article about portable equipment for the interpreting space. And how equipment isn't improved. You don't need to have all of this, heavy, expensive equipment that you lug with you to all of your assignments anymore. But also, what I wanted to talk about is the ability of patients, of users, of clients, customers to self-serve their own translations. You mentioned that doctors were going rogue, Deepak, and finding their own solutions. Well, limited and English proficient folks here in the U.S. are also going rogue. They're downloading interpretation and translation devices onto their phone and using those. And I just wanted to see if you guys had any comments on, is this a good thing that people are doing this? Is it working? How do we see that happening if in 20 years from now, when everyone has a translation app on their phone, do doctors even need to provide interpretation anymore?
So it's a good question. Is it a good thing? I think it depends on the scenario. So if you ask that patient that decided to use Google Translate to interact with a clinician because they did not get an interpreter, I think that patient would say, yeah, this was a good thing because I was able to understand at least something the clinician said versus a world that had nothing. And same thing if you talk to some of those clinicians where they're working at hospital systems where they don't have access to interpret quick enough, they'd say, this is better than nothing, Tucker. So from that standpoint, I think it's a good thing. From a device standpoint, I'll just give you, we know one of the elements of interpretation is providing interpretation via video. And the way that happens is these hospital systems have an iPad on a cart they wheel around.
Right.
And usually that device is only dedicated to video interpretation. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely silly. 10 years from now, we're still relying on an iPad on wheels to do interpretation. That makes zero sense. So I think more experimentation on the hardware side. And I do think there'll be a world, and Rhonda, I'd love for you to weigh on this, where there's more simultaneous interpretation, where it's not like the clinician says something, the interpreter says something, patient says something. In a perfect world, as the clinician is talking, the patient is truly understanding. So the meeting is shorter, right? The interaction is shorter, which is better for the patient, better for the clinician, better for everyone.
Yeah. How close are we to a babblefish, Evandro?
As close as, that's going to come about as fast as we can solve the latency issue. Because what gets in the way of us communicating one past another is the ability for AI to quickly finish, as quickly as I did, finish that sentence and deliver that in order to allow somebody else to, another part of that technology to listen to what is already being said in return. Currently, when that happens, I'm still busy delivering that package. Don't bother, listening to something. It's just noise at this point. If I hear something on top of that, And then it gets complicated. So I know of companies that are now claiming to have bidirectional AI interpreting ability, simultaneously. I haven't tested it yet. I don't know. I'm a bit skeptical still because I know latency is not there. As we advance on the latency aspect, that's going to become more of a reality. Now, nothing precludes, if enough pauses are made, not like in consecutive, but if enough pauses are made not to have people talk past one another, that's already possible. That the doctor speaks and I'm already get simultaneously, and then it's easier for me to respond, and we can already shorten the duration of the meetings and everything. And again, these are things that are going to change so fast, Tucker, so fast. And if we meet again in 6 months from now, most of what we said today is going to be obsolete.
Sure.
Because those things are being solved as we speak, right? And I just said, somebody's already out there trying that. Maybe it's already working, and I don't know. I haven't seen it, right? So again, it's going a lot faster than we think.
And it's being solved to the extent that's actually like possible, right? Because I'm just thinking, I'm by no means identify as a linguist like you, Evandro. But it's like, I know enough German to know that, you know, a lot of times the verb comes at the end of the sentence. So how are you going to do simultaneous translation or simultaneous interpreting if you have this big run-on sentence and you don't even know what the verb is until you get to the end, right? And you have to translate that into English, you know? Also, humans speak differently, right? And it's just, read a transcript from a meeting or from a speech, or, you know, pick your favorite celebrity, politician, whatever, read a transcript from that speech, and it's a completely different sentence structure. It's a completely different way of talking than if someone were to actually sit down and write it out in a certain grammar, right? Run-on sentences, you know, starting thoughts and not finishing them, and you know, I don't know that technology will ever be able to figure that kind of stuff out. Am I saying there's not going to be a solution? No. I mean, someone smarter than me will come up with something, but there are a lot of inherent challenges just built into the fact that languages are all different.
It's complicated. I don't think anyone's going to disagree with that. I think you have to take in trade-offs. I will say we're in early innings here, right? And then the analog I give us is, if you think about the internet, right? What's the internet when it was first, like Netscape was like 95 or something like that. And then at some point we had like Ask Jeeves, like later, years later, and then years later at Google. I mean, it took a while. We're in early innings here. We're in the second inning, if that, for LLMs and AI. And look at all the progress that has been made.
Yeah.
And so I just think about all the other aspects of our life that have fundamentally changed. And I look at a year and a half ago, how the world was completely different. I think I wouldn't bet against technology not being able to solve these things. I think there's bigger sort of macro questions as a society we need to ask ourselves in terms of empathy and want to communicate with humans. And do we pay a premium for that? But the question of whether or not technology can do these things, I wouldn't bet against it, because we're early innings and the pace is going so quickly. It's going to happen.
And Tucker, just we're clear. When I say latency, I don't mean the kind of, you know, 2 second delay that, you know, I'm saying something, you need to wait for the, you know, last bit of the sentence and so on. So I'm going to slow my response a little bit, and then maybe you're going to hear that a second later. That's okay. Human interpreters do that too. These are accommodations that are totally okay.
Okay.
The problem is, if you're, you know, we've all been through a situation where you're watching a movie with captions and the captions go like this and the sentence is long gone and you're still seeing the characters, you know, compose a phrase that has been said a minute ago, right? So that you can't have, because if somebody wants to respond to that, then it makes it all very artificial.
Okay. No, I understand. Thank you for explaining that to me. I get it. So, I mean, I'm with you, Deepak, is there's people much smarter than me working on this in 5-10 years from now. Can technology solve it? The tentative answer is yes. How is it going to solve it? We don't know yet. Right? Is kind of where I'm at. And that's an exciting thing. And it's an exciting time to be... not just in the language services industry, but it's an exciting time just to be alive with all of the advancements that are happening. We're out of time. I mean, time flies when you're having fun, right? But gentlemen, any closing thoughts before I wrap us up today?
I appreciate Vanjo, you spending time and Tucker, you doing this. I do think we need to have more conversations. I think more people need to be involved in the conversations, people of different backgrounds, ethnicities, you know, sex, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I do think we need to have a perspective and dictate what role AI wants to play versus having it dictated to us. And there's a lot of companies getting a lot of money to sort of just create this future. What we have is we have the experience, we have the credibility, we have the knowledge to really dictate this is how it should work. And the only way we're going to figure that out is through more conversations like this. So just appreciate your time.
Yeah,
absolutely. Always a pleasure, Deepak, to see you and have a chance to chat with you. You know, final words are for people who don't say enough. And if there's one thing that can be said about me is that I talk too much. So I'm just going to end here and say thank you very much for having me and for the opportunity. Very nice.
All right. Thank you very much. I'll close us up here today. But before I do, go check out helloglobo.com to find out more about what Deepak does over there. Also, follow Deepak on LinkedIn. He's a good follow. And Evandro is always posting good stuff. He writes lots of articles on LinkedIn. If you're not following Evandro, make sure that you are doing that. So with that, I will take us out today. Ladies and gentlemen, chat, we are out of time today. If you enjoyed this NIMSY Live experience, and join us next time. I know Deepak is coming back. I know Evandro is coming back. I know we want to get Gio in here. Evandro, we were just talking about that. So we have other exciting guests that we're going to loop into the conversations. I appreciate my guest today. I appreciate all my colleagues here at NIMSY Insights doing all the hard work so I can have these interesting conversations. And finally, I appreciate you, the audience, joining us live today. And I look forward to next time. Cheers.
Thank you.